Well, this morning, we get to continue talking about counterfeit. And I got to be honest, this was a tough message to prepare because this morning we are going to talk about the ego. I know. And well, let's just start off all on the same playing field, okay? Let's just make sure we're all there. You have an ego. Just want to throw that out there. You may think, oh, I don't have an ego, blah, 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 blah. That's probably your ego telling you that. Just for a fair warning, I have an ego. And so because of that, also, this, even preparing this sermon was hard because I'm like, I'm just second guessing, like, do I want to, like, does my ego want to say that? Or is that, I don't even know. But this morning we want to talk about the counterfeit of the ego. And so that's where we're going to go. Let's dive in. For those of you who don't know, ego is one of three parts of Freud's concept of the psyche. It is comprised of the id, the ego, and the superego. A lot of us probably learned this in school, I would guess, but I'll just give you brief notes. Some of you may not have learned it in school. Some of you, it might have been a super long time since you've been in school. I don't know. So the id, let's start with the id. The id, according to Freud, is the primitive and instinctive component that acts impulsively. So if you ever make an impulse decision or something that you just didn't really think about, that's your id. It lies 100% below your subconscious, so you're not aware of your id. Its main job is to attain pleasure and to avoid pain. And it does so through just pure instinct, okay? There's no conscious thought about it. That's the id. The ego is a little more complicated. The ego is your part that seeks pleasure and avoids pain, but it does so above the subconscious. It does so a little more constructively. However, the ego has no concept of right or wrong. That is your superego. Your superego is your moralizing construct of yourself, the one that helps you try to make right decisions and be selfless and do things to help people and so on and so forth. So that's kind of just the super quick and dirty version of id, ego, and superego. Way more complex than that, okay? Our ego is the version of ourselves that we try to let people see. It's the part of ourselves that we're kind of projecting to the world. Like, there are parts of myself that I'm not proud of. And I know those things. Generally, those things I keep in my subconscious. But I don't want you to know those things. That's what the ego tells us. It's to hide this kind of stuff and to kind of project this persona that is kind of good. The ego tells us that, like, we're better than others. Like, if you've ever felt that way, like, oh, I'm so much better than them. That's your ego. So, welcome. Anyway. Have you ever had something that you were just terrified if people knew about? Like, I don't even want to ask it that way. All of us have that thing that we kind of have that we kind of don't want people to know that we think those things or that we said that thing or that we did this thing. Like, there's just part of us that is a little more instinctive in our subconscious that wants to hide. And this is the ego that is trying to hide these things for us. Anyway, that may bore you. I don't know if you care about psychology or not, but here's what I've come to find out. I've really enjoyed learning more about this and how it relates to our faith, because it does. And the wild thing is, like, Freud was not setting out to write some sort of document on faith. Like, he wasn't a theologian. This was not his objective. However, you may have noticed that the id, the ego, and the superego are kind of like a three-in-one. How curious that he developed this construct, yet the Bible tells us that we were made in the image of God, who is also three in one. Later on, the Bible also talks about, you know, that you are body, soul, and spirit. You know, we have these three-in-one constructs. Now, it's important to note, before we get too far, that Freud's constructs of id, ego, and superego are not biological constructs. Like, you're not going to, when you die, they can't cut you up and be like, here's your id. Here's your ego. It's not part of your neuroscience even. It's just part of your psychology. Okay? It's just a psychological construct. It's a theory. Okay? So they're not going to go into your brain and, you know, you're not going to have go get an EEG or whatever, and they're going to say, okay, well, that's his id working. That's his ego. It's different than that. So, but I say all that to say this, that it's interesting that God's truths are being spoken out in the world, even by people who don't even mean to, because truth is truth. Like, we are this kind of three-in-one, made in the image of God, complicated thing. And I just think it's so neat. I don't know about you. Some people are afraid of science, especially people of faith. But man, the more that I study things in like a scientific way, I personally feel like, you may feel differently, I feel like the more science that we understand in our world, the more like God is being proved. Like, to me, I the more I read, and I'm not a great reader, to be honest, and I'm definitely not a good scientist, because I just go off my gut most of the time. Anyway, which doesn't make for good science. But the more that I read, I'm like, man, God did that. Man, God is smart. He figured that out a long time ago. That's why he made it that way. Like, it's cool. So, anyway, so the passage that I read to open us, I think, is very prevalent in this discussion about our ego. And I don't have it on the screen, and it may be in the YouVersion app. I'm not sure. But it's found, I think I put in the Matthew 16 version. Seeing some head nods. It's actually found, this passage is found in all three of the Synoptic Gospels. If you don't know what the Synoptic Gospels are, there are four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, three of which, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are called the Synoptic Gospels. They are all very, very, very similar. Some scholars believe they all came from a similar source and that they all had this common thread, that they all kind of knew about each other. Anyway, so those are the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. If you've ever read all four of them, you would notice that John is quite a bit different. John is, well, I mean, let's just be honest. John is just beautiful. The book of John is just, if you haven't read the book of John, just go enjoy yourself, okay? It's just a good, solid book about the Christ. Anyway, Matthew 16, Luke 9, and Mark 8 all have this exact verse in them. And it says this, I already read it to you. Jesus said, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. So kind of three components. If you want to come after me, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Now let's just for fun, let's put ourselves in the shoes, or the sandals, I suppose, of the disciples. Maybe they were barefoot, I don't know. Let's just imagine we're there. And you hear Jesus say this. Now, he said this before the resurrection. So put yourself in their shoes. They hear Jesus say, okay, deny myself. Take up my cross. What the? Take up a cross? What the heck does that mean? Can you imagine hearing Jesus say this? Like, their only concept. So we have all this 2,000 years of history where the cross is everywhere. It's a symbol of faith. You know, we get that. But can you imagine them hearing these words before Jesus was crucified and resurrected? Like, the cross was just simply a way that the empire murdered people or put criminals to death, depending on whose side you're on, I guess. I don't have an answer for this, by the way, in case you were looking for that. But just try to put yourself in their shoes listening to this. What do you think was going through their heads? Take up my cross. What the world, Jesus? Now, the disciples were often in this position, I feel like, of saying, just what is Jesus even talking about? This guy, man. but anyway, just I think it's a good practice as we read through the text to try and just put ourselves in their shoes or sandals, because it matters. Like, Jesus said these words to them in a specific way, in a specific context, for a specific reason. And so for us to try to just gain some insight into their worldview, I think is good. So, peculiar. What a peculiar thing to say, I think, for Jesus. I think, you would probably agree, Jesus is foreshadowing. I think he knew it wouldn't make sense to them at this point, but they would come back and say, ah, that's what he meant. We just thought he was crazy. But he really was making sense. I think the disciples did that a lot. Secondly, I think that this concept, this first concept, Jesus said, if anyone would come after me, they must deny themselves. I think that this has gotten a bad rap. It may be in our society, possibly in other societies. I don't know. I'm a product of our society, so I really can only speak for myself. I think that self-care, our own health, and other really important practices of taking care of ourselves and you know, doing things that help us, I think these have taken a really wrong turn with this verse. Because I think sometimes we read deny yourself, and we think, oh, well, I shouldn't do anything good for myself. Has anybody ever heard somebody kind of allude to that? Or has anybody kind of felt like that was kind of the gist of this? I think that's pretty common. And it seems pretty convincing when you read a lot of the words of Paul. Paul talks about flesh in a way that's very negative. And it can kind of, I feel like it can make us think that we shouldn't take care of ourselves. But I don't personally believe that that's what Jesus is talking about. In fact, the Gospels, and Jesus talks about the flesh in a positive way. John 1 says the Word became flesh and made His dwelling among us. God took on this flesh to bring us salvation. So that seems good. I want to read a quote from Richard Rohr here about this topic. It says, our poor bodies, which Jesus actually affirmed, have become the receptacle of so much negative energy. Christians are much more disciples of Plato, with body and soul at odds, than we are of Jesus, in whom the Word became flesh, where body and soul are willing partners. Jesus even returned to the flesh after the resurrection, as all accounts make very clear. So flesh cannot be bad. Our bodies are, in fact, the hiding place of the divine. See, I think God has chosen to use us. I think God made us in His image, and that matters. The idea that we are somehow, like, that we should deny ourselves, our flesh even, you know, I think that what Paul is alluding to is essentially sin. I mean, right? Like, when the things of the flesh are the things of sin, I think we get these two concepts muddled sometimes. I think it's really easy for Christians especially to not take care of themselves because we hear things like that. And I just want to make that as a preface before we get further into this, that I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. I think that's harmful, and I personally think it's bad theology. And I think that we need to stand up for that because it's important to take care of yourself. It's important to be healthy and do things that are good because God made us in His image. Romans 6 says that we are a temple of the Holy Spirit. Okay? So, there's that. I think that what Jesus is saying when He tells us to deny ourselves is the ego. I know that this is a construct that was developed, you know, almost about 2,000 years later. I get that. So obviously, I don't think Jesus would have actually said the word ego. A, He didn't speak English. B, the idea wasn't around. But I think that when we need the part of ourselves that we need to deny is this ego that we so heavily rely on, the illusion that we can exist and be successful in life apart from God or outside of His will is the definition of sin. Let me say that again. The illusion that we can exist and be successful in life apart from God or outside His will is by definition sin. So there's a lot of things. We talk about sin a lot in the Scriptures. This is what it means to sin, to be outside of God's will, and to imagine that it is even possible to exist apart from Him. It's not. This is sin when we are living separate from what God wants for us. And our ego, the very thing our ego wants, is to convince us that this is reality. That we've got this, we know what we need to do, we're in charge, we are, you know, we can do it on our own. You know, our ego is selfish, self-serving, and arrogant and prideful. And if we can't realize this, I think this is the huge battle, because it's even hard to realize or admit that our ego exists and that it is leading us and not God. This ego, this other leader, is what some theologians over the years have called the false self. Now, this is, again, just another construct, but the false self is the self that is separated from God, the self that thinks that we can exist, the ego, outside of God. And then the true self is the image bearer. Our true self is that self that God created, that He made us in His image, that is good, that He, you know, that He wants for us to become. You see, God made us all for a purpose. Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper, not to harm you. God made us all good for something good. But we all have this ego, this false self that we rely on so heavily. Some other people call it the separate self, the false self or the separate self. Some people just, I mean, this Paul often refers to it as the sinful nature. It's kind of all the same thing that we're saying here, but it's this self that believes that you can exist on your own, autonomously, and outside of God's will. So, your construct of God that you have is sufficient, meaning that you don't need others, which is your ego, by the way, and you can do it. You know, you've got all, you know, I can do it on my own. This is the ego. So our goal, therefore, is to expose our ego for what it is. This, I believe, is the first and most difficult task of denying ourselves. Because we have to admit to ourselves that we have this false self, this separate self, this ego that is just one that just thinks we got it all figured out. Thinks we can, I can do it on my own. I know what I need. That it also convinces us that we know. It can convince us of the thing that we know who God is and what His plan for everybody is. And I think we call this in our Sunday school class the pious lens, that we think we've got it all figured out. This is the ego. Expose our ego for what it is, and deny ourselves. And then allow God to reveal our true self. This is, I think, the metaphor that Jesus says next, is take up your cross. You see, you've heard it said, probably the old adage, we all have a cross to bear. You know, there's something that each of us was designed for. And that's what Jesus was talking about. Jesus was designed for the cross. Because He came to lay His life down for us so that we could experience salvation, so that we could experience God. That was that good and pleasing will, like Jeremiah says. That's what Jesus came for. And each and every one of us in this room and in this city and state and the whole world, we all have that cross, whatever it is. It may not, you know, being murdered at the hands of an empire. Hopefully not. Because that would make me sad. But there's something. We were made for a reason. There's something. And that's your true self. That's the self that God, it said God knit you together in your mother's womb. He knew these things that He made you for. There's some purpose that God has you on this earth to fulfill, to find, to discover. A lot of times I like to think of it almost as archaeology. You know, like we're chipping away the parts of the world, the sinful nature, if you will, that like Paul calls it. We're chipping that away to find that true self that God made. So how do we do that? Well, I'm sorry, Matthew continues on. They all continue on and say, and follow me. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. So the question is, how do we manage that? One of my favorite verses, which is in John, I think holds the answer for us. It's in John 15. If you're familiar with John 15, it's a beautiful story about John or Jesus saying he's the vine and the branches, and then he goes on to say that no one has greater love than this. He who lays his life down for his friends. But John 15:5, I think, kind of sums it all up this way. It says, I'm the vine, you are the branches. If anyone abides in me, you will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. So the first step of deny yourself, I think, Jesus is speaking to our egos right there. Apart from me, you can't do it. It's just not possible. But so many of us, myself included, I spend so many days relying on my own ego, relying on myself, and not abiding in the Father, not abiding in that vine. And in fact, I think that the reason that so much of our world is divided is for that, just that first simple reason, is because we're all running around relying on our egos and we're not relying on God. And there's a lot of people out there who are relying on their ego in the name of God. And they're calling their own agendas God's agenda. And this is nothing new. This has been happening since the beginning of time. You know, people say that they're doing something in the name of God that's horrendous. But if I'm going to be honest, I think I do that in small ways. Yeah, I'm not terrorizing a nation. But I think there's things in my life that I say that I know is true about God, or that God is doing this. And you know, on days when I'm not relying and when I'm not abiding in that vine, I think it's just my ego. And I think that many of us probably experience the same thing. It's important to remember that while each of us has a plan, that God has something rich for us, that we're part of the, you know, we're part of the vine, and once we abide and, you know, all that, we're a beautiful part of God's plan, but we're a small part, right? The ego makes us want to think that we're the big part of God's plan, but we are just a small part. And I'll tell you what, each and every one of us, no matter how much you think you know, your worldview is small. My worldview is small. There is so much that we don't know. There's so much we haven't experienced. You know why? Because you've only experienced one person's life. Even part of one person's life. You haven't experienced the whole thing yet. You know, we were talking in Sunday school this morning about how there's something that Daniel and I went to an Andy Stanley conference this week. And there's something he said that I thought was so good. And he said, one of his challenges was for us to respect each other's opinions. Respect anybody's opinion, even if you don't agree. Even if you strongly don't agree, respect their opinion. And why? Well, chances are that they came to their opinions through the same route that you came to your opinions. They lived and they experienced things and they read things and they learned things and they were taught things. And now, because of all that, they have that opinion, whatever it is. And so often we hear something like that and we're like, oh, I can't believe that they think that, or I can't imagine being like that, or I don't get it. Well, did you hear what was said there? I can't believe. I can't imagine. I don't get it. It doesn't sound like the problem's them. It sounds like the problem's you. There's something that you don't understand. There's something that you don't get. There's something that you haven't experienced And this kind of relates a lot to this whole process of the ego, of denying ourselves. This is the gift of the church. You know, we don't have experiences, but we don't have each other's experiences, but we gather regularly. We listen to one another. This is what James, the brother of Jesus, said when he said, "Be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." That's basically the same thing. If someone else has an opinion, be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Why? Because they may have a perfectly reasonable, you know, explanation for their opinion. You just don't know it yet. Quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. This is the work of the church. The work of the church, in the words of Jesus, each of us individually and together, we must deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow him. By denying ourselves, we have to confront our ego. And I wish that it was just like a one-time deal, like, oh, I've confronted it, now I can take up my cross. No, it's every day. It's important work. It's not a checklist. It's important work that must be done every day. There's so many opportunities for our egos to become inflated and to lead us, for our selfishness to lead us and not be led by the Father. There's literally an infinite amount of opportunities. So daily we must deny ourselves and we must take up our cross. We've got to ask God, who have you created me to be? What is my cross to bear? Where are you leading me? That's the other thing. Our ego oftentimes tells us to be concerned about somebody else's problems, you know. Man, if they would just, right? But take up our cross. Find our true self. Uncover the person that God made us to be and follow him. Just as John 15 says, abide in me and you will bear much fruit. Abiding may look different for each of us. You know, abiding may be sitting for an hour, you know, reading the scriptures and praying every day. Abiding may be, you know, just taking deep breaths while you're driving down the road, you know. Abiding may, I don't know, be smiling at somebody in the grocery store, you know. But it takes intentionality. It takes being purposeful. The process that Jesus gave us is important. And the message is clear. The ego is counterfeit. Apart from him, we can do nothing. If we are led by our ego, we're going to be led someplace unhealthy and unhelpful. Sure, we may gain riches in this world, I suppose. But we won't find our true calling. We won't find our true self. And we won't be following Jesus. Because that's not what he did. Would you pray with me? God, we're so thankful that you sent Jesus. Oh, man. What a privilege for the Word to become flesh and to teach us all these things. And for him to take up his cross, literally, so that we could have life and have it to the fullest. God, we know that our egos can just make us so prideful and selfish and arrogant. Our egos can get in the way of a lot of good. And God, we know that it's easy to mask. We know that it's easy to put on a good face. And oftentimes that's just our ego protecting itself. God, I ask that as each of us sit here and think about whatever, think about what we're doing now, think about what's next, that you would just challenge us, God, that you would put it on our hearts and minds so that we can't forget about it, to deny ourselves, to confront that ego, to stare at our false self and say, you're not real. You're not who I was created to be. And to take up our cross and to find that good plan that you have for each of us. And may we follow you. And by following you, may we simply abide. We may not know the way. We may not have all the answers. But God, just help us to abide in you. For in that, we will bear much fruit. Thank you again, God, for allowing us to gather in such an awesome place with such an awesome family. Continue to speak to us, not by power, not by might, but by your Spirit, O God. For it's in your name we pray. Amen.